Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Thanks for joining me again. This is Smart for Black Girl episode or session two. Before I start, I always want to talk about why that name was chosen. And Smart for Black Girl was chosen to highlight a lot of the microaggressions that Black women face, especially in spaces that are predominantly white or in intellectual spaces where we're not as represented. So I typically get questions where people say, why not just put smart? And it opens the conversation, it opens the platform for another conversation about things that we face. So that's why I chose that name. Thank you guys for being here. Today I want to talk about ADHD in adults. This is very close to my heart. It's very important to me because it's literally like my life. ADHD is part of everything I do. It impacts everything I do, to the point where I don't even feel like I have a diagnose. I feel like it's not something that I have. It's like a part of who I am. Like that's how much it impacts my life. And I think it's important for us to just be open about things that we go through, different ways that we cope, and you never know who's listening and how we can help each other. So if you'd like to speak or ask questions or anything, you're welcome to do so. And yeah, so this is typically just very, very open and raw and conversational. I don't like it when it's very, I don't like when it's a big production. I want it to feel like an honest, heart-to-heart conversation. So just feel free to join when you like, and thanks for being here. Yeah. Hi. Right. I like for me it's taken a long time to get to the place where I can actually embrace it because when I talk about getting my diagnosis, I describe it as like actually something that saved my life. Just because of this how much I was spiraling before I knew what was wrong. And as someone who is just like very ambitious and always on the go, always trying to improve, there came a point where I felt like I was stuck. I had no motivation. I had no energy. And my brain was just saying like no. And I did not know what to do. And I fell into a depressive episode because, I'm just like, okay, I'm literally failing at life. So after I got my diagnosis and started treatment and meds, and it was rebirth. So whenever I talk about that, I'm just like literally saved my life. Right. And I mean, I think it's also all that you know. So it's probably like your comfort space, right? Like if things were too calm, then you'd be in a panic because that's just not where you thrive. That's not where you're comfortable. That's just not what you know. The other thing too, I think that's important that you mention is, a lot of people are against having a label or a diagnosis, but it's very, very important because that's how you communicate amongst your healthcare team. That's how they know what they're treating. That's how you know what's happening to your body. So it goes beyond just like having a label, because if you don't have that diagnosis or label, like your providers won't know. Like they can't communicate with each other because they won't know exactly what's happening. So that's like the important part of having a diagnosis. The other part to that is, inequity in access to being evaluated or assessed, and inequity in treatment. And this starts like in childhood, right? So like a lot of other things, kids of color are way less likely to be diagnosed with ADHD or treated, and then these symptoms become even worse most of the time in adulthood, where it's hard to keep a job, it's hard to function appropriately, it's hard to acquire pro-social skills, and it follows you along the line where you're less likely to be successful. And which is not true. And I think what I've been finding out is a lot of us who get diagnosed as adults, we came to some kind of like end point where we're like, what is going on? So what happened is, we managed it for so long until something happened, or workload got heavier or something, where it's like, okay, I'm at like my wits. I'm at the end right now. I need to figure out what's going on and get help. And it's so much more than a behavioral thing, and that's why when people who don't understand that, they think like, well, if you have ADHD as an adult, you can just like tell yourself to not do this or not do that, because they think of it as, oh, you're running around and you can't sit still and you just can't focus. And it's like, no, it's also insomnia, it's also depression. It's also really wanting to do something and you literally cannot. It's also being sensory overloaded all day, every day. It's hearing people breathe. Like, how do I explain to you that I can hear you breathe? I can hear a click in the light switch, and I can't do anything until those go away. You know what I mean? Like, it's these little things where you can't really explain to someone that does not get it. Right, it's not just like a one occurrence or something happening, that's it. This is your life all day, every day, in and out. It's how you communicate, it's how you experience the world, it's how you learn. You know, I remember in primary school, I must have been like 8, and I was always, even through high school, I was always either in another class helping a teacher teach, or I was writing on the board. And I used to say, like, oh, I must be the best writer in the class. And, you know, now that I'm older and, you know, I have a PhD in psychology, and when I do a lot of interventions for kids with ADHD, a lot of times it's like helping them, giving them like classroom tasks to keep them occupied, like I had. Or, you know, if they're ahead of wherever they're supposed to be, helping them find other things that keep them stimulated. And then I look back, I'm like, oh my God, like this whole time I was tricked. And I thought, like, you know, I was just given these special tasks, but no, they were just trying to keep me on task so that I'm not messing up everybody else's learning. But you know, as you get older, it looks and it feels differently. Yeah, I definitely agree. And it, you know, it looks differently for different people. It, you know, and the other thing too, you know, there's the primarily inattentive ADHD, and then there's combined, and then the ones that are mostly you know, hyperactive, which looks more like impulsivity as you get older. And you know, a lot of kids or even young adults where you see they keep getting in trouble with the law or different things, like a lot of these are like undiagnosed mental illnesses, and we set them up for failure because, like, they don't understand what's going on with them as much as we don't either, you know. And luckily for me, being in psychology, that was very helpful, because I got a better understanding of what's happening and how I can, you know, manipulate certain things to make sure or plan ahead. But I still struggled a lot. And one of the best things for me is because I'm big on self-advocacy and I'm very transparent. So as I walk into a classroom, I'm like, listen, this is what we're dealing with. So if you see me doodling on my notebook, I can only pay attention to you if I'm drawing.
if I'm just paying attention to you, you lost me, right? So I had to like give them ahead of time, because a lot of teachers will be like, well, that's disrespectful if you're just writing or drawing and I'm talking, and I'm like, that's the only way for me to pay attention to you. I have to do something else while I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. It's hard to, you know, grasp, but trust me, this is the only way. Exactly. That's true. And you know, it changes, because for me, I have a planner on my phone. I have one on my computer. I have one that I write in. I have a to-do list for my to-do list. Like, because one of my biggest fears and one of my biggest worries for ADHD is my memory. I will meet someone, and when I meet them again, I have no recollection of ever meeting them. And it seems so rude. And you know, at one point in time, I was worried that something else was wrong, like, oh my god, like early onset dementia or something, because my memory is like, I have to write every single thing down. And so that was something that I had to come to terms with, like, okay, write it down, text it to yourself, so have it somewhere so that you're not so worried about forgetting about it. You know, that was the biggest part. That was the biggest, and continue to be the biggest struggle for me with ADHD. Right. And even with your social relationships, like, people will say, you're not listening to me because you're doing this and this and this. And I'm like, that's the only way I can listen to you. If I sit here and just stare at you, my mind will take me somewhere else. So if you see me doing something else while you're talking, like, trust me, I'm listening to you. Or even when I say, have a movie night, right? My partner will say, like, why are we watching the movie if you're not watching the movie? You're just typing on your computer. I'm like, I'm watching the movie, just not like you watch the movie. So, you know, if they quiz me, I will tell them every single thing, because I can do these things. But if I'm just doing one or the other, I can't. Like, it's hard to explain, and it's hard to grasp, because it just, you know, it's not what's the norm. Like, your brain is literally, it works differently.
Yes, especially people who don't have any experiences within that. Like, for example, I was reading some peer review articles, and I did not know that a lot of people with any kind of neurological disorders, especially ADHD or autism, they have this strong level of empathy and social justice approach to everything. And it's almost like you feel everything so much more than the typical person, which can lead to burnout, and it's like a cycle. And I mean, they still don't know exactly why that is. And they theorize that maybe it's because people with neurological disorders usually go through a lot of like struggles, whether it's bullying or, you know, being an outsider or not being understood. So they kind of like, feel like it's part of their, you know, role to promote fairness and equity and stuff. And I thought that was so interesting. But I think research needs to do more work with adults with ADHD and what that looks like, because a lot of our struggles is stemmed in looking at kids with ADHD, and it's not the same. As you age, the symptoms look differently. They present differently because your life is different. You know, you're not just in class with your friends anymore. You know, you're at work, I remember one time at work I had to have this thing where it says don't talk to me, because you know, it like, if once you say hi to me, that's the end of that. Or then it became when I was not allowed to go distract my coworkers, because I was so good at that, you know. Or when I had supervision with my supervisors, they would say, Nikita, please, can we not go on a tangent today? And I'm like, you think I planned this? But you're going to say a word that's going to remind me of something that has nothing to do with this, and I'm going to have to tell you about it, or it physically hurts me not to tell you. Like, sometimes that impulsivity, like, it physically hurts me sometimes to wait my turn. Like, I can't even explain it. Like, I have to say, oh my God, let me tell you this. I have to tell you right this minute. Like, I just have to. And it feels like, oh, you're just spoiled, or you're making up excuses. And it's like, no, some of these symptoms, like, they physically cause so much distress. I have to let them out. Yeah, I get that. I think one of the big things too, for, you know, living with this and being successful outside of, you know, medicine and treatment, and, you know, not everyone is medicated, and that's their right. For me, there's no question about it. Like, the quality of my life has significantly improved with my medication and all of my other strategies that I've developed along the way. But even like working in groups, how people work a problem is not how I can't function the way they do. You know, they work on it a little bit over time. I need 5 hours and I get it done. Because if I don't do that, next time I pick it up, I can't pick up from where I was. Like, my mind doesn't work like that. Like, wherever I stopped, Like, my transition is going to take me a lot of time to make it make sense. So I work in big blocks of time. You know, it's like one day I can't get out of bed and my brain says, nope, you're not doing any work. The next day I will sit in the same spot for 10 hours and do all the work. That's just how it is. And it, you can't fight it. That's just how it is. I don't know what else to tell you, but like, that's just how my brain works. And so it's just a lot of like explaining and advocating and just like telling people, like, you know, because you are not neurodivergent, you know, you have a normal brain, quote unquote, you can make these decisions on your own. You can do things as you wish. My brain doesn't work like that. It tells me when to do whatever I'm doing. And sometimes it literally just says you are not doing anything. And it sounds like a joke, but it's true. Like, that's just how it is. Yeah, it's just finding, you know, the right balance of like, how stimulated do you need to be to get something done? How much of a panic do you have to be at your best? And it really sucks when you truly think about it, but that's the reality. I didn't choose my brain. I didn't choose this brain. Like, there's not, I'm doing the best I can at any given moment. And with ADHD, someday you get 100, someday you get 30, and that just has to be okay. I don't know what else you want from me. Like, that's just how it's going to be. When I'm at my best, I'm at my best. And some days I will not be at my best. So, you know, just being transparent has been very, very helpful. It's similar. It's similar. We have a similar relationship through Twitter, where last week I was talking about like building your community, and whenever I meet or interact with people that I vibe well with, I keep that connection, and that's pretty much how I continuously build my community. And I have different communities for different things, and so that's how we met. Which is a whole different type of Twitter, by the way. Yes. I mean, it's normal Twitter. We call it Jamaican Twitter because of the things we talk about, and yeah, it's yeah. So it's just a little bit different. But for those who are just joining, thanks for being here. This is Smart for Black Girl, and again, I say I chose that name so I can highlight a lot of microaggressions that Black women face in a lot of different spaces. If you'd like to talk, come on up, we'd love to hear. We're talking about ADHD in adults and just like the inequity with assessment and diagnosis and trying to maneuver life when your brain, you know, pretty much is, I call it upside down, but it's not really upside down. But that's what I say. When I can't function, I just say, oh, my brain is upside down. But yeah, so welcome, welcome.
Anthony. Thanks for being here. I'm doing well. How are you?
Right. Thanks for being up here and thanks for talking. Yeah, I think I value people who are so willing and open to be vulnerable. I think that's how we learn. That's how we learn and build empathy for each other, because you never really know what someone else is dealing with or going through. And if people only look at your wins, they don't really understand like what it took to get to where you are. Or they think just because I have this diagnosis, I can't do this or can't do that. And that doesn't limit you. It just means you might have to work a little bit harder. You might have to find more supports, but you can still make it work. It's just gonna take more effort than it would have if you weren't. So, yeah. Yeah, it's nice to not be alone in your struggles. Because so often before we know, you think like this is just a me thing. I need to get it together. And then you talk to other people and they're also struggling with it and you're like, "Oh, okay, this is not a me thing. I'm not failing. I'm struggling with this. This is happening to me and I have to deal with it. It's not who I am, but it's happening to me." And that change in mindset goes a very, very long way. Thank you. We want to hear from Jill. Why is Jill not talking to us tonight? They're having a. There you go. welcome. How's it going? Thank you so much. I'm glad that you guys are here. And anyone else that would like to come up and speak, you're more than welcome to do so. And whoever is just joining us, we're talking about ADHD in adulthood, what it looks like, the inequities with getting a diagnosis and getting access to treatment, and how it affects, you know, your everyday life, including your relationship, your mental health, your professional life, your sleep. People with ADHD are often insomniacs. We get our energy at 2 a.m. when everybody else is going to sleep. So, for example, when I was on internship, my schedule was different than every other intern, because when everyone's getting tired and ready to go home, I'm just ready to go. So I would go in later and stay later while everybody else left. So it's just figuring out different what might work for you, and being open to advocating for that, you know, without shame. You did not choose to have ADHD. That's just how it is. And that once you accept it, everybody else need to accept it and figure out how do we make accommodations, because, you know, legally it is a disability. So if people refuse to make accommodation, like, that is a lawsuit waiting to happen. I don't know if you guys even knew that. Exactly. Hi, Laurel. Thanks for coming up. you.
That was very, very helpful. Thank you so much.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up because as someone, a neurodivergent just means that like our brain is different than the norm. Anyways, but there's a lot of strength that comes with our diagnosis as well. For example, I can have five different conversations at the same time and not miss a beat. I can work for long periods of time and be so focused and so like painfully specific and very like detail oriented. Like when I write my psych reports, like my supervisors look forward to reading all of my therapy notes or psych reports because like it's almost like I'm telling a story because it's just so specific. So there are a lot of things that we do that maybe take us much longer, but it's also like a strength. So I'm really glad you brought that up. And it's funny because people who don't have ADHD, they will say things like, "Wait, what are we talking about again?" But people who do, they are also not skipping a beat. So you just go back and forth and back and forth as neurodivergent, while everybody else, they're just looking at you like, "What are they even talking about?" So it's really funny to just watch the interaction and see like how people react. Oh my God, yes. Oh my God. Like people, so I have a downstairs, and people will say, "Well, you can store some of your shoes or clothes downstairs." No, I won't know I have it.
And it does, I know it doesn't make sense to you because you just remember what you have. I need to see it to remember that I have it. Like, that's just how it works. So, yeah, it's what a time. What a life. But... And as long as no one touches it or moves it, like, I'm good. I know where it is. The minute you try to help me, you, like, I'm going to lose my mind. Like, your help is not helping. Because now I'm worried I won't ever remember whatever was there before. And I'm going to obsess over it for hours and get nothing else done. And this is not by choice. That's the part that's really hard, too. It's not, I don't want to do this. This doesn't feel good to me. But that's just how it is. Right. And I mean, sometimes we plan for things that might not happen, but I'd rather do that than worry that what if it does happen and I'm not prepared. So, you know, I have to hold on to it just in the 1% that it just might happen. But as we get close to the hour, I'd like to just share some strategies that have worked for me and whether or not you have. Oh, the other thing too is, just because you don't have a diagnosis does not mean you do not have ADHD, just so you know. Having a diagnosis helps your team to provide, you know, adequate and efficient care for you. It helps them to communicate to each other and helps you to understand what's going on and get more, you know, psychoeducation on it. But just because you didn't get a diagnosis does not mean these struggles are not real. So I want to make sure I clear that up because we all know about, like, you know, the barriers and access to quality care. Like, some of us are privileged enough to have that and some of us don't. But it doesn't make the weight any lighter. So that's one thing. The other thing is, so for me, I find I rock a lot, like back and forth. And I don't notice when I do this, but apparently it's like when I'm emotionally overwhelmed. And my friends will say, why are you rocking? And I never know until they ask. And from reading, it's called stimming. And a lot of people, a lot of neurodivergent people stim, but we stim in different ways. Some of us tap our feet, we tap our pens, we tap our fingers. I rock back and forth, and it's very comforting to me. So one of the things is just finding out, like, what's something that you can do fast and easy to regulate. So mine is stimming or using my weighted blanket, or I'm very sensory. So I walk around with a lot of essential oils and I probably smell like a grandma, but I always have peppermint somewhere because it helps me just kind of de-stress. So finding what can help you de-stress. The other thing too is I get overloaded very easily, like sensory overload. So, you know, if I visit my family, I'm typically in a room by myself for a while because I have to, like, recharge and go back and recharge and go back. You know, if I'm in a room of a lot of people, a lot of times I'm soaking up whatever feelings they're having. So if it's chaotic, I'm feeling their chaos. If they're anxious, I'm feeling the anxiety. So, you know, I either remove myself from the situation or find other ways. So one way that have really worked for me is getting indoor plants.
So I'll tell myself, like, okay, brain break. And what that means is I need to do something that I don't really need use my brain a lot for, like watering my plants or organizing something or just whatever it is. I have a list of brain break activities, and I use that just to kind of rest because my mind goes a million miles an hour constantly. So I have to be very intentional about taking brain breaks. So that's helpful for me. Planners are helpful. Alarms are helpful. I mean, I'm always late. Even if I don't go to bed at all, I'm still late. How? I don't know. But, you know, I will tell myself, like, oh, I'm going to put this show on as I'm getting ready. Knowing that's a very bad idea because I will lose track of time and I'll be late. And, you know, like clockwork, it happens every single time. So if I set an alarm for every 10 minutes, then I can keep track of the time. So just finding little things, finding a community that, like, help you feel like you're not alone. People that you can talk to, and it's effortless, right? Like, I can tell you guys what I'm going through without shame or guilt or stressing to really explain and wondering if you believe me or not, because you do believe me because you go through the same thing. So, you know, the importance of community comes in again. The other one for me is psychoeducation. I continuously learn a lot about my diagnosis just so I can figure out what is attributed to that and ways in which I can help myself or ways in which I can just, like, be more compassionate to myself. So that's also very helpful. And if you guys want to share some other techniques that you have, I would love to hear it. Please join. I would love to talk to you. You know, we have to look out for each other. So, yes, please join. Awesome. Isn't that incredible? Oh my God. I cried. The first time I heard silence in my head, I cried. I'm like, this is the norm? This is what normal people hear nothing? Oh. Yeah. And I mean, shout out to you for knowing when you need a break and taking that break. That's also very important. Just giving yourself time to process and learn and breathe before you go back in. You know, because you're on your own journey, you're on your own timeline. You can't possibly be behind because you're the standard. So whenever you're doing it, that's the right time. So, you know, shout out to you for recognizing that and you know, being compassionate with yourself and taking the break that you need. Like knowing your needs, because after that, you know, it's up from there, because you know what's gonna happen before it happens, and you are figuring out new ways to even prevent it from happening or lowering the intensity of whatever is gonna happen, and it gets easier to handle as you age, and because you're just constantly reflecting and being self-aware, which two great skills to have regardless of ADHD or not. But thank you guys for being here. I love, love, love having these conversations. I look forward to it. So next week, I want to talk about breaking generational curses. That's our topic for next week. And I hope you guys join me again. For all the people who have their own shows, invite me. And, you know, I talked about memory not being very well. So you have to invite me a couple times and remind me. but I would definitely love to support you all. Yeah, and thanks to Sabrina and Rev and everybody else that spoke up. Thanks to Laurel and Andy and Jill and all of our listeners, wherever you are. Yeah, I'm grateful for this platform. I'm grateful to speak up on behalf of people who might not have this platform or the confidence to speak out about, like, you know, their experiences and their struggles. So I'm grateful for that. And I want to leave you guys with a mantra tonight. So the mantra says, I release trying to do everything on my own. I am allowing support and supporting others. And yeah, so have a good night. Have a wonderful week and see you guys next week. Bye.